This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Nin Andrews has come here from Charlottesville, Virginia, and I begged her to come, and she is here because I wanted so much to share her with you. She's going to give you an opening poem. Here is Nin Andrews.
Dear confessional poet, how else can I say it? I hate what you do. You and your entire school. Ever since that Christmas ages ago when my parents gave me the complete works of Anne Sexton and Sylvia too. Like Princess Di, both of them, only the princess was in the right profession. Of course, in those days, confessional was in. Poems about my ugly face and big bad daddy. For some reason, they remind me of the first time I went to an evangelical church. It was with my friend Mary Rose. She was just so sweet, she wanted to save me. After the service, women gathered in this carpeted room called the library, without books. And one of the clergy asked us to kindly tell a little tidbit or two about our wounds. It was horrible. I was there. I can't tell you how horrible it was. As if on cue, this blonde started sobbing and talking of abuse. Even her bouffant hairdo was trembling. Terrible tales of an alcoholic dad and what he did, and others chiming in, me too. When it was my turn, I couldn't think. So I told how once upon a time, when I was a little girl, my mama hated shopping so much she bought everything two sizes too big. Even my underpants were huge. They came all the way up to my nipples, and my skinny little legs hung out of the holes like spaghetti strands. Thank you for sharing, everyone said. All I wanted to do was puke. I think everyone did. I think that's what sharing means. Mary Rose patted my knee and hissed. Is that true? Yes, I said, but I wished it weren't. I wished I'd lied. Later, that's what my professor said to do. Why not, he told an entire class, define the woman you aren't and live to tell about it.
That is Nin Andrews, and now you know what I'm talking about. I am Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress. Nin, what is that book? What is that particular poem from?
That's in Sleeping with Houdini.
And what is that book about?
Sleeping with Houdini is a collection of poems about a mix of poems about childhood, about growing up in the South. It sort of has a bit of a dreamlike sense as well as a serious sense, but yes.
What are all your books about? I mean, you have many voices. I would love you to do a one-woman show. I would love to have one of your characters stand up for 1 hour on the stage, and I think you should consider that. You have many voices and many books, but there are common themes. What do you think you're always saying?
You know, I don't know that I'm always saying one thing. That's a really good question. My poems come from so many different places. They're poems like this one where I actually hear voices. Then there are poems that are more of idea poems where I think of an idea, like I imagine in my book, Why God is a Woman, that the men are the beautiful sex and the women are the political and the powerful sex. And what would that world look like and how would I construct it? Even what would their religion and myths be? So that's an idea that inspired it. And then there are poems that come from, I think I can say this on the air, like the Book of Orgasms, and where I think of, which actually has a sort of oddly a grammatical beginning. I imagine, what if the orgasm really were a thing?
You know, though, I have to say something. Every one of your texts takes on race, sex, and gender, and all of those big ideas that you don't even realize you're doing. I mean, every one of your works attacks our primary issues in America. And surely you know that on some level.
Well, I definitely
there's
know that.
There's feminism, there's race, yes, there's yes, everything.
Yes, I definitely know that with my last two. And I can sense it in the others. I wasn't as conscious of it. In my last two books, obviously, Why God is a Woman is a feminist text on some, hopefully it's more than just that. And my book, Miss August, is about growing up in the South mm-hmm. and the tremendous resistance to integration. Mm-hmm. Yes, so definitely.
That's Nin, and she's going to give us some more. She has been published so many places in most of our most prestigious magazines, the Paris Review, Agni, Best American Poetry for several years, the Best American Erotic Poems, I think that is said wryly, an anthology of minuscule fiction, The House of Your Dreams, an international collection of prose poems, Seriously Funny. You're getting the point that this is, I think, the Mark Twain of poetry right now. And she has received many awards, but more importantly, new poems.
So this next poem is, I don't know if you had a Catholic education, but it's about sex, getting sex education from a Catholic sex ed teacher. It's called Bathing in Your Brother's Bathwater. Bathing, Miss D'Angelo informed us, in health class is very important, especially once you become a teenager. In fact, I can smell many of you this very day. So I advise every one of you girls to go home and take a good long bath tonight. I know some of you folks like to skimp on water, but consider it homework. Say Miss D'Angelo assigned it to you. But girls, let me warn you, never take a bath in the same water as your teenage brother. Why? Well, picture this. All those tiny bubbles settling on your legs when you sit in a nice tub of water. If you could count every itty-bitty bubble, that would be only a fraction of how many sperm stream from a single man. Even if he doesn't touch himself, the water does. And it only takes one fast-moving, whip-tailed sperm. And you know how easy it is to catch a cold, how quickly that little virus races clear through you. And once that happens, no one will believe you're any Virgin Mary, no matter what you say. And I'll just add on to that that my mother was a dairy farmer, and her response to this was, this is a little short one, it's called Sex Education According to My Mother. Sex education, according to my mother, is a total waste of time. Surely, if the heifers can figure it out, you girls can too.
She has been your muse, I think, and a good one. Now the audience knows what I'm talking about. If you took Dorothy Parker and Louise Glick and put them together, we would have Nin Andrews. And here's the special thing. Humor's one thing, poetry's another. But when humor is real poetry, that's the start of something big. So Nin Andrews is here, and I'm going to ask her one question. You take angst, and you fill it with humor, like helium, and it becomes very light. But what do you think our angst is right now that prompts you to write about it?
Our angst is right now that prompts me to write, period?
Yeah. What itches you inside and makes you uncomfortable enough to want to write it right now?
I think I always have angst. And I always have this sense that people aren't seeing things. So, you know, I thought I was done with my feminist writing, and then the politics of the day has made me think more, like, oh, I have to write some more. I have to put Jeff Sessions in some women's clothes, you know, and make him feel what it's like to be an abused woman. So that kind of political twisting, turning is agitating. I don't have that poem written yet, but I'm working on it, and that's the kind of thing that compels me today.
So contemporary affairs really get under your skin until you transform them.
They do.
Let's hear another poem. Nin Andrews, I'm Grace Cavalieri at the Library of Congress.
Well, I was talking about my mother in the last poem, and I'll read, this one is about my father. My father was very Southern, my mother was very Northern, and my father practiced, he was a storyteller, he was also, he practiced every superstition known to man, and he also made up a few, which I didn't realize until years later when I was standing in a room, and it was a crowded room, it was a cocktail party event, and suddenly it went quiet. And I announced, oh, that means that the dead are trading places with the living. And people looked at me like, whoa, what are you on? And I realized, like, don't you know the superstition? Every 20 minutes, the dead trade places with the living so that way when we die, we'll be familiar with them, and it's part of life. And they looked at me like, whoa. So this is a poem about that, and to hear my father's influence and his sort of mystical, magical influence. And then I can read one about my mother's response to him. Anyway, this is called Like This. When I was a girl, my father said, every 20 minutes we vanish, go silent, join the dead and our dreams. If you could time it and knew when to start the clock, you'd see them too, lingering there between one thought and the next. Some steal a breath of your air or give you a pinch. Others walk right through you on a whim. A sudden chill, a shudder, it's the natural response. Try to stop them if you can, repress or pretend. Say no one's here. You're all alone in the evening air. It makes no difference to them. They know where they've been and how much they like it, touching you like this, traveling through you again and again.
That's beautifully lyrical.
And then I'll just read this one. It's my mother's. You can hear my mother by contrast. It's called Nonsense. I hope you don't believe all that nonsense your father tells you, my mother said. He's always making up tales about ghosts and magic and his sixth sense. How he had a premonition before his brother Billy passed on. But you know, he never tells the same story the same way twice. I tried to correct him. Reginald, I say, that never happened. Kate, he answers back, this is my story. Have another drink and think about it. Sometimes, he says, behind every tale there's another tale. That's the one he wants to tell. But I think he just makes stuff up. He thinks he can invent another world, one he might want to live in. I ask, what if everyone did that? He says, most folks do. Historians, palm readers, lawyers, weathermen, politicians do it all the time. That's why we elect them.
I know where you got it now. Oh, boy, do I ever know what that DNA is now. He sounded pretty cool. And did he influence you?
He did. He was a tough man, and he had a complicated life. He was, both my parents were tough and complicated. My father was a wannabe artist. He never really allowed himself to paint or to pursue it or take it seriously, even though he was very talented. And he always said, you know, only the artists are free. You know, don't try anything else. Art is where the magic is. But he himself wouldn't do it.
But he said it.
He did say
it. And you believed it.
Oh, totally believed
it. And you live it. And so Nin Andrews is going to show us right now more of her magic art.
Okay, so...
And tell us the book it comes from.
Okay. So this is one more muse, per se. And this is a woman who was like a grandmother to me. He took care of me when I was young. And it's called Powerful Magic. Lord knows it will take a powerful magic to raise you upright, my grandma from Memphis, Tennessee, liked to say. She always claimed she had eyes in the back of her head, and she was right. Because whenever I did something wrong, she was there to tell me about it. You did a bad thing, she'd say. Yes, ma'am, you did. You did a bad, bad thing. In fact, you did a thing so bad, it's a good thing your mama didn't see you. You don't tell her, and neither will I. It will be our secret. Between you, me, and the Lord Jesus Christ. We don't want to worry your mama now, do we? And we don't want to tell her any bad things. Then she'd pick me up in her arms and sing me a hymn. I'd lean back to see her lips form the words. I'd watch her bosom rise and fall like waves, big ocean waves. She'd keep right on singing, too, till I asked her if she was ever going to stop. Child, she'd say, don't you know anything? The Lord's song is never done. You got to make a bad thing good, so sing it. Sing it with me now. Sing it good.
Wow, you can remember. You have an indelible memory. When you wrote that poem, did you flash back on it as if it were a film and actually capture her cadence?
Yeah, well, I hear her voice. I mean, I think that, like I said, certain poems come from the voices in my head, basically. And I think, oddly, when people have passed away, they talk more. And then they take on a sort of character in your mind, you know? I mean, if you're trying to make up your mind, I can hear them saying, well, honey, I wouldn't do that if I was you. You know, you can kind of hear that, and you can, you know.
I'm so glad you're a writer, because I'd hate to think if they were all there at once, unexpressed. That would be a bad thing. Let's keep going.
Okay.
She's a woman of many threads, let me just say that. Her tapestry is great, and it has all kinds of spectrums of colors in it. She has done so many different things and different voices that I don't doubt that it's difficult to pick one out. But I would like it very much if we had a sample of each one of your latest books. I have to say that she has 7 chapbooks and 7 full-length poetry collections. She has 2 grown children, lives on a farm in Charlottesville, Virginia, with her husband, Jim, who's a physicist, and they have a Boston Terrier named Froda. Does this farm have any plowing around it to do?
No plowing. Well, we have to bush hog, but we have cows. But
you have
not
cows?
Plow. Yes, we do. So,
is this a carryover from your childhood?
No. We have a farmer who works the land, so yes. I'm not ready to go back. You know, my mother was a dairy farmer. That was a lot of work.
I can't imagine.
My goodness.
I can't imagine.
So we have some steer on our land.
I have a picture of her from one of your writings where she storms into your kindergarten class with her boots.
Oh, yes.
And all the other women in their coiffed hair.
Yes. Oh,
and
yes,
their pearls and their cardigan sweaters. And she comes in. Oh, I love that. I
yes,
love that.
That's my mother, yeah.
Okay. Give it to us. Nin Andrews at the library.
So these are from Why God is a Woman. And again, I talked about it earlier. It's an imaginary world where the women rule and the men are the beautiful sex. And most of the poems begin with the phrase, on the island where I come from. On the island where I come from, women rule. They run the country, control the wealth, and decide who will do what, why, and when. And at the end of the day, when the sun sinks into the sea, the women leave their offices behind and go out in the town to enjoy what is known as the women's hour. In bars, restaurants, and spas designed for women only, they relax and let out a sigh as the day's thoughts and fears rush off their skin like water. There they linger as day fades from the sky, chatting among themselves, making occasional cracks about the guys. Men, they say, are such incomplete souls. They don't even know how to love. Together they grow calm in the light of their minds before returning to their homes, their men, their children, their dogs.
I mean, it's not a mean book. Let's have another.
On the island where I grew up, the men earned 70 cents for every dollar the women made. The women had little faith in the male work ethic. As my mother explained it, men lack patience, the key to great work. The metaphor she used, a man impregnates a woman in a single night, but he never understands the long months of swelling with child. While the island women worked day and night tending the island's needs, the men worked only the daylight hours, which exhausted them so completely. They fell into a deep sleep at the end of the day, never waking to the cries of infants, birds, angels, or the youth who partied on the streets. This, of course, was not the men's fault. Men, my mother said, can't be blamed for their genetic defects and limited work ethic or abilities. Besides, the best men are those who are satisfied with their traditional island roles. Yet when I was a boy, men marched in the streets waving signs and demanding equal pay, jobs, and rights. Every few years, the women gave the men a small raise. Mm. They hired a few more token men. But when the economy soured, the women stopped hiring or giving raises. They said they were only willing to pay a man what he was worth, not a penny more. The worth of a man was an ongoing island debate.
What is the title of that book in case everyone wants to buy it?
Why God is a Woman.
Why God is a Woman. That's easy to understand. Okay. And keep going.
Okay. On the island where I come from, the most popular toy for boys is the charming Boberto doll, notable for its exaggerated male attributes, luxurious black hair, and mysterious smile. While some islanders consider these dolls to be a sexist depiction of the male gender, the dolls remain a bestseller, with the average island boy owning at least 7 Bobertos. Toy stores on the island sell Bobertos for every occasion, including the ever-popular holiday Boberto dressed in hunter green trousers and a crimson silk shirt, unbuttoned to the navel to reveal Boberto's island tan and classic muscular silhouette. and the sizzling summer Boberto dressed in a sporty safari outfit and a matching sun hat. If you pull summer Boberto's drawstring, he transforms into swimmer Boberto in an azure Speedo and flippers. Summer Boberto's accessories include a swim mask, suntan oil, and a diary with a golden key and the words, "I love Angelina," inscribed in tiny letters on every page.
Oh, Nin, I've been waiting so long to hear you, and I feel I'm getting a private reading. Now go to another book.
Okay, so the most recent book that I've written is called Miss August, and Miss August is a collection of prose poems written in three voices. There's a voice of a girl called Sarah Jane, who is a young, poor white girl. There's a boy called Gil Simmons, who's the son of a wealthy landowner. And there's a nanny called May Dee. And so I was just going to read a few of those. I'll just start with the first one is Sarah Jane talking about Gil, her friend Gil. It's called The Story of Gil Simmons. People still talk about Gil Simmons. They say that boy was one strange bird. They say he wasn't right in the head. They say his daddy ought to have taught him a thing or two. These are Lexington, Virginia folks, mind you. When I was a girl, they shot deer frozen in their headlights and stray dogs that howled at the moon. They flew their Confederate flags in front yards. They spoke to God and ghosts and called black folks names I don't say aloud no more. And they closed the public schools. Don't let the coloreds in our classroom, they said. Restrooms neither. But Gil, they thought, was the strange one. Stranger than a faggot, they said. Still do. I smile, light up a cigarette, and say, define normal, if you will.
See how you tackle the big ones.
So this is another one. This is a... Still Sarah Jane, and this is just a short little piece. It's called Bacon Grease. I was hungry all the time back then. So whenever I visited the Simmonses, I snuck into the kitchen hoping the servants wouldn't be down there. Thelma caught me every time. What you doing, Miss Sarah Jane, she asked me. Nothing, I lied. When I thought her back was turned, I dipped my finger in a tin of bacon grease Thelma kept on the stove, stuck it in my mouth, and sucked. You say grace before you eat that? Thelma asked. Yes'm, I lied. I said it to myself. Lord, make me thankful for the bacon grease.
Keep going.
Okay. So this is one more poem from Miss August, and this is a little later in the book. The book is a coming of age story, and Gil is having a little trouble with his identity. So this one is called God's Mistake, and again, it's Gil talking here. God makes mistakes. Even as a boy, I knew it. I hated how everyone said God is perfect and great and all that kind of stuff. I wanted to say to them, look around, why don't you? Look at all the folks who aren't who they say they are. Not a bit like it. All the sick folks, all the ugly folks, all the mean folks, all the folks who look half-baked. All the folks who think if they can just get a new hairdo, a new car, a new dishwasher, they'll be just fine, thank you very much. I feel sorry for them. I really do. Sometimes I wonder if anyone feels okay in their own skin. Nobody wants to admit they're all wrong, so they make up stories or pray, or they drink cocktails at 5 o'clock like my daddy did. Whiskey on the rocks. Lots of whiskey, not many rocks. Doesn't make a man into somebody else, just makes him mean. Me, I don't pretend. I blame God. I say, God, you made one big old mistake when you made Gil Simmons. But he don't answer me. You know how God is.
Nin Andrews is a woman of many facets, and she is going to give us a closing poem.
Well, I thought I would close with a poem which called Southern Accent. And as a child, I really struggled. My father had a Southern accent. I love the Southern accent. And so I developed a pretty strong Southern accent. My mother was from the North, and she didn't like it. So she was always trying to correct me. So I have two accents. I can switch back and forth. A lot of time, a poem sort of arrives in one accent or the other. So this poem is about my mother trying to correct the way I speak or spoke. It's called Southern Accent. The day I came home with a busted lip and two black eyes, my mother said the problem with me was my Southern accent. Get rid of that extra Y in daddy, and you're talking about your father, not some deity. I tried to tell her it began with a dare, but my mother said it was dare, not dare. And besides that, she didn't want to hear one thing about it. A girl is supposed to act nice and speak like a lady. If you're going to fight like a boy, you can cut your hair like one, too. What's more, that stuff growing on top of your head is not hay, as in hair, it's hair. Drive into Watson's Beauty Salon downtown on Jefferson Park Avenue, she instructed me to open my mouth nice and wide. Say ah, not a. I didn't mean to, I tried to explain. It was just an accident. Not everything rhymes with bear, my mother commented. She was from New England. She wasn't like me. But I never could get it right. No matter how I tried, I could hear my father's voice, his Memphis drawl in the back of my head. You being about as helpful as a crawdaddy under a rock? When was the last time you peeled your mama's spuds or washed your hands and said something sweet with a smile on them rosebud lips? I knew how to answer him, keep my eyes cast down, my voice a wisp. No, sir, yes, sir, or if I dared, can I please be excused? No, ma'am, he'd answer just as quick as a blink. You can, but you may not. Not as long as you don't know which word is proper and what kind of excuse you might be. I'd wait, keep my mouth shut tight, but there were always those thoughts circling my mind, sassing him like a beginner's violin, the slow ache in the middle of each word I'd never lose. You think you're as bright as a rock on a rain-soaked night? When was the last time you were anybody's wish? But my best one was this. You say you're my daddy. Well, what if?
The voice of Nin Andrews, and this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Additional support from the Sinipid Fund. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.